I'd like to add to that thought that Alan introduced in his prayer about the song leaders of this congregation. I think we're blessed beyond measure with good song leaders. I'd also like to say again to those of all of you for your great encouragement that you are in your singing. You're a great inspiration to everyone who comes through, those who visit and those who are new and those who are old. You're an encouragement to them. You've been an encouragement to me. I remember hearing other people tell about Gordon Teal's statement when he would say, even a stick could preach after hearing singing like that. One day about 4 years ago, the telephone rang, and on the other end of the line, the voice said, oh, Brother Woodruff, it's awful. I said, what are you talking about? She said, oh, it's just awful. And then she began to relate how she was missing the college church. She had graduated and was now out somewhere in Podunk Hollow, and she was just absolutely suffering, remembering the singing, remembering the peer support, remembering all the encouragement and the good warm times that we've had in our assemblies, and her general lifestyle here in this community, and she was hurting. She had forgotten the bad things. She was only remembering the good things. The bad things are the size. In one sense, it's bad. The other sense, it's good. But there are some liabilities attached to it. It's easy to get lost here. It's easy to think that you're being missed is not noticed nor cared, because it's so easy just to become overlooked. And your talents many times are not utilized. And so many things that are liabilities with a congregation this size. She had forgotten all of that and was only remembering those things that were good. And she was really experiencing what we call a culture shock. You do this when you go from one country to another. You also do it when you leave one congregation that you feel has, to a degree, met your spiritual needs and go to another one that you think is not meeting them. And that's what she was experiencing. There's not all that much in the Bible about fitting into a local congregation. There are some things in the Bible about the congregation absorbing those who come to be fit in. For example, in Romans, the 16th chapter, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a deaconess of the church in Cenchreae, that you may receive her in the Lord as befits the saints and help her in whatever she may require from you, for she's been a helper of many and of myself as well. Now that's some pretty pointed instruction on how congregations ought to absorb new members. 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, verses 10 and 11, is another example of it. Talking about Timothy. When Timothy comes, see that you put him at ease among you. Make him feel at home, is what he's saying. For he is doing the work of the Lord as I am. Let no one despise him. Speed him on his way in peace, that he may return to me, for I'm expecting him with the brethren. Timothy, this is kind of off the record. I don't know what was wrong with him. Something was not quite right. Because Paul, it was Timothy to whom Paul wrote and said, don't let anybody despise your youth. And then here he writes to the Corinthians and says, don't you despise Timothy. I don't know what was wrong with him or whether anything was wrong with him, but it just goes to show at least that there are special people that we may have to give some special attempt or some special attempts must be made in order to make them feel at home. He says, you put him at ease among you. Make him feel at home. He may have been shy. He may have been kind of retiring. I don't know what it was. But anyway, that was instruction to the churches regarding the receiving of new members. Perhaps something that is applicable to new members and to newcomers as they fit into a church is 1 Timothy, the chapter 4. Look over there right quickly, and we'll... 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. This pertains particularly to those of you who are students who are going to be going out from this congregation as you finish your work. You'll be fitting into local congregations all over the country. To you, as young people, let no one despise your youth, but set the believers an example in speech and conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. That's some pretty pointed instruction about the way you're to fit in. And then chapter 5, verse 1, is some good general instructions regarding personal relationships. He says, do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as you would a father. Treat younger men like brothers, older women like mothers, younger women like sisters in all purity. Now that works whether you're a man or a woman. Treat the old people like they were your father, or your old men like they were your father, younger men like brothers, older women like mothers, younger women like your sisters. Now, other than this, there's not really all that much in the New Testament about how you fit into a local congregation. So how does one adjust? How does one become a productive member of a local congregation when he leaves this place? First of all, I would like to recommend that you check a little booklet called Where the Saints Meet. I'm not sure who publishes it, but any bookstore of the in the Brotherhood would have this little booklet, Where the Saints Meet. Get one of those. We have one here in the office. Check in it before you move anywhere and see whether or not there's a congregation there. Now, you'll need to know that before you go any further. But look here just for a moment. Where there is no church, if you check in that little book and you find out that where you're meeting, there's no, or where you're moving, there's no church meeting, something's going to have to be resolved. You're going to be going perhaps to a place that may be 75 miles from the nearest congregation of the church. How are you going to handle that? Are you going to drive 75 miles there and 75 miles back each Lord's Day? A lot of people do. And lots of people have, over the years, done that very thing. Some congregations, where they are so widely dispersed and where they are so scattered, some congregations have what they call a back-to-back service. They'll meet at maybe 10 o'clock in the morning for Bible study. They'll meet at 11 for worship. And then they'll eat at 12 for a couple of hours and associate with each other. And then have a 2 o'clock service from 2 to 3. And then they are free then to go on back home, maybe for a 2-hour drive. But as a result, they are able to get together, study the Bible, eat together, fellowship with each other. And it's a great advantage. And it's a great source of strength. There are some disadvantages, of course. You're not going to have much outreach. People are not going to travel 75 miles with you to go to church. The ones with whom you're in contact, they're going to say, why, there's a community church right around the corner. What's the deal about going 75 miles? You mean to tell me you travel, you go 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours? Yeah. Well, that doesn't make sense. I'll see you when you get back or something. They're not going to be going. So there's a disadvantage. You're not going to be able to have much outreach if you're traveling that far. So the other alternative is to start a meeting in your own home. Start a church in your own house. Now, that's what happened in the New Testament times. Aquila and Priscilla, wherever they went, they seem always to have started a congregation in their own home. Maybe some of you have done that same thing. After the first service tonight, a woman came up and said they were going to down into Brazil. I think she said Brazil. And that they were going, they didn't know whether there was a church there or not. So she was wrestling with what to do. And she said the lesson was especially appropriate for her because she didn't know what they were going to do about an assembly. So you could start meeting in your own home like Aquila and Priscilla did. Or like the lady in Colossians 4, what was her name? Nympha. Nympha had a congregation meeting in her house. How do you begin doing that? Well, run an ad in the local paper. Just simply put in there, you can put in there, baptized believers wishing to meet with other Christians and eat the supper on Lord's days. Or, members of the Churches of Christ, please contact this number. You can do that, and you'd be surprised what kind of response you get. Those who've done it have been really encouraged by the overwhelming and generous response that they get from people. And if the ad is general enough, you might open up some doors of opportunity that you might not open up if you just put the Church of Christ non-instrumental, non-premillennial. You know, if you narrow it way on down, you might not get anybody to answer that. In order to help you meet in your own home, let me give you a recipe for unleavened bread. Louine gave me this recipe today. You can write it down. Many of you take notes. Take this down. 3/4 cup of plain flour, 3/4 of a cup of plain flour, 2 level tablespoons of shortening, 3 1/2 tablespoons of water. Cut in the shortening. Us cooks know what that means. Cut in the shortening and add water, a spoon at a time, and mix with a fork. Roll thin on a floured board, and then make the little cross, the cross marks so that it's easily adaptable or breakable. Roll thin on a floured board, cut desired size, bake at 425 degrees. And that makes about a 3 1/2 inch by 3 1/2 inch loaf. Now, you'll need to know that. Then Welch's grape juice can be obtained at any grocery store. Also, you can buy boxes of matzu bread. It's a Jewish Passover bread, an unleavened bread that is what we use here, in fact. And if you want to do that, it's available at any grocery store, I think. And then let me ask you to do this. Write Landon Saunders at this address at 11947 North Freeway, Suite 400, Houston, Texas, 77060. The reason why I'm asking you to write him is because you may very well be heading right into an area where your ministry is already made for you. There are lots of people who are listening to Landon Saunders on the radio program Heartbeat, or to Batchel Barrett Baxter on the Herald of Truth program, and you could serve these people as a contact with the church. And if you'll do that, I guarantee you, more than likely, there's a ministry there waiting on you already. Now, but that's in case there is not a congregation where you're going, where you're going to move. What about if you're moving where the ordinary church exists? How are you going to settle into that congregation? And these churches come in all sizes. They come in all shapes, small, large, alive, dead. Many have no elders. Many others who have elders would be better off without them. Many have no preacher, and many who do would be better off without them. So you're going to have all different shapes and forms and sizes, all different kinds of situations. How do you fit in where there's just been a split, for example? How do you fit in where the singing is horrible? And if you compare it with the college church singing, you're going to be calling up and saying, oh, it's terrible. Well, how are you going to handle that? How are you going to handle it when the leadership has no vision? How are you going to handle it when the messages from the pulpit, 99 or 95% of the time, are directed to the outsider who isn't even there? Where you've been used to about 95% of the messages being directed to members of the body, many congregations don't have that arrangement, and they think that the public assembly is for the outsider rather than for the Christian. How are you going to handle that when you go there and you sit and you want to be fed and you're not fed? Well, now, something's got to give. You've got to adjust your thinking. You've got to adapt, or some very disruptive things are going to come. Well, all right, remember this as we get into some practical suggestions. Where the church is the weakest, the need is the strongest for you to be locked into it in a meaningful way, but also the temptation is going to be the greatest for you to pull away and become disenchanted and disconnected from the church. Now, I just want to make that, and I think it's obvious enough, where the church is the weakest, the need for you to be locked into it is the strongest, but also the temptation to pull away and disconnect yourself from the church is going also to be the strongest also. Let me give you about seven things to remember. Number one, discouragement will be the major battle that you're going to fight. In a life session some while ago, this came out, and the people in the life session agreed that discouragement is going to be the biggest battle that you fight when you leave a congregation of this size with the strength of this eldership and the organization of the body and the functioning of it. When you go into some little congregation that doesn't have that kind of leadership, you're going to be terribly discouraged. They came away, they said, from the assembly saying, why in the world did we go? What was the purpose of our going? And we asked them, well, why did you go? What did you come up with? They said, we concluded that we were trying to serve the Lord, and as a result, we were there doing what we could. And they also concluded that you cannot rely on the church for the source of blessing, and that you must not put your eye on people, but on the Lord. Now, by the way, that's important. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, Paul said at one of his trials, everybody forsook me. Now, he was talking about his brethren. All the members of the church, he said, forsook me. At my first defense, no one took my part. All deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood by me and gave me strength to proclaim the word fully, that all the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil and save me for his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. So I would urge you, keep your eye on the Lord and not on people. As surely as you put it on each other, we're going to become discouraged. So, first of all, realize that discouragement is going to be your major battle. Satan will get to you, not on doctrine. That won't be the first place he's going to hit you. He's going to hit you in your emotions. He's going to hit you there. You'll be battling not for some doctrinal position that you're going to have to stand for. The major battle where you're going to have to stand is to keep his foot out of your door and keep you from being discouraged. All right, the second thing, don't equate involvement in the assembly with Christian involvement. You see, the Christian life is not lived in the assembly. Your Christian ministry probably will not be fulfilled in the assembly. Neither will it be frustrated in the assembly. Don't equate involvement in the assembly, and this is to men mostly, obviously. Don't equate your involvement in the assembly, in leading singing, leading in prayers, speaking, whatever it may be. Don't equate that with involvement in the Christian life. It just is not, you can't equate it. Be there every time the doors are opened, and I guarantee you it won't be very long until even what talent you have that has at first maybe been overlooked, it won't be long until it will be used in a meaningful way. Number three, be a self-starter. Be a self-starter. In a simple way, this can be done by having a letter written by the church where you are, sent to the church where you're going, or carry that letter with you when you go. Dorothy, I apologize for that. If 2,000 students who leave this place come by and ask you for a letter, that's going to be kind of difficult. But I'm sure you can handle it. I'll be gone in a couple of weeks and you take care of it. But be a self-starter. This is a good way. Just recently a man wrote me, or called, I forget which, and said, would you write a letter to the church where I'm going to be placing my membership and just say what you want to about my involvement in the work at the college church in Searcy. So I did. And you know what? It wasn't long before they had him so involved that I think he wanted me to write another letter and tell what all he didn't do. But they really put him to work. And that'll happen, I think. That's what happened when Paul wrote the letter to the Romans. He sent it to the church in Rome, probably through the woman who was named Phoebe. In Romans, the 16th chapter, what we read a moment ago, it said, receive Phoebe. She's a deaconess from the church at Cenchreae. Receive her in the Lord as befits the saints. Help her whatever way she may need. She's been a helper of many and of myself as well. He told what she was, where she was from, her involvement. All of this, you see, he just laid it out and said, this woman can be trusted. She's a deaconess there at the church at Cenchreae. And so, send a letter. Be a self-starter. But here's something else that you can do to be a self-starter. Open your home in hospitality. And young ladies, this is where you shine. This is where you can control, really, the work of the church. You have a very simple, silent way of effecting the work with a leaven of goodness and hospitality that just cannot be overlooked. Instead of going to a congregation and sitting around waiting on some of them to ask you into their homes, don't waste one Sunday. Just simply say to somebody, hi, we're new here today. We'd love to have you come over and have lunch with us and just tell us something about the church here. I don't think anybody will turn you down. I think they'll be more than happy to come home with you. And probably the next week they're going to say, why don't you all come over to our house? We're having a few friends in. We'd like to have you with us. And then there it goes, just like a snowball. But it'll just, you just be a self-starter. Don't sit around waiting, wondering why the people here are so unfriendly. That's just a pitfall that you can avoid very easily. Another thing, start having a Bible study in your own home. But let me encourage you, ask the elders of that congregation to just use your home as a host home for a Bible study. Ask the preacher, if he would, to teach it. And just say, I've got some friends, some neighbors next door that I want to have into our home. Would you come and be with us on such and such a night and help us with this Bible class? And I would urge that this be done and have the elders as a part of it. Don't be caught in a very, I think it's a dangerous situation. Not that it's dangerous necessarily, but it appears as a threat to the eldership of some congregations. If anybody does anything in their home in the way of Bible study, they look upon it as being a bit unusual. It shouldn't be like that, but it is. Number four, practice Romans 14, 1 through 13. And you say, well, what in the world does that say? Well, I'm not going to read it all, but the first four verses give us a hint as to what he's talking about. As for the man who is weak in faith, welcome him, but not for disputes over opinions. One believes he can eat anything, while the weak man eats only vegetables. Let not him who eats despise him who abstains, and let not him who abstains pass judgment on him who eats, for God has welcomed him. Who are you to pass judgment on the servant of another? It's before his own master that he stands or falls, and he'll be upheld, for the master is able to make him stand. What he's simply saying here is accept people where they are, and don't force them to be where you think you are. And the reason why I say you where you think you are is because of the fact that most of the time you're not where you think you are. That's right. You just think that you're there. And I'm not where I think I am. I just think that I'm there. Let me give you an illustration of it. Stanley Shipp once was in touch with a young lady at a congregation, and she was visiting there in St. Louis? Yeah, where he is. And he said, he called her by name and said, where are you worshiping? And she said, well, some friends of mine and I, we have services in our home, in my home. And she said, it's just so great. Of course, she said, there's a congregation right near us, but they're dead, and we're just kind of pulled away, and we're meeting in our home. And Stanley, in full ship fashion, ship shape, he said, thank you for telling me that. He said, I'll make it a point not to be a friend of yours. She said, What did you say? He said, thank you for telling me what you've done. He said, I'll make it a point not to be a friend of yours. She said, Stanley, what are you talking about? He said, if that's the way you treat your friends, when you learn about them something that's not right, quite right, you just abandon them. He said, I don't want to be one of your friends. And she got the point. I don't know whether she went back with the church that was struggling or not. But listen, don't make them be where you think you are. Accept them where God has accepted you, and just accept them, as Paul said, accept them as the Lord has accepted you. Wouldn't it have been an awful mess if the Lord had come and found Simon Peter and these other men and just pulled away into a little hole by himself and said, well, those men, they're hopeless, they're dead, and I'll just stay over here by myself. No, it wouldn't have worked. Never talk about the church. Don't compare them with the college church. And listen, would you tell me that all together, maybe with one loud voice? Don't compare those people down south with the college church. You know me. You know what I'm going to do. Before I know it, I'm going to be comparing them with you. And they're going to come up short. Don't you do that. When you go overseas, one of the biggest pitfalls that people face is comparing America with New Zealand, or America with Brazil, or America with some other, and they'll bait you. They'll say, what do you think about, how does America measure up, or how do we measure up to America? And you just say to them, I really like it here. Yeah, but what about our houses? How do they compare with, you just say, I really like it here. You just avoid that like you would a plague. And whenever there's an opportunity to compare the church where you're going with the church that's here, just don't do it. Just say, I really do like it here. Pray for them instead regularly. Pray for their good. Pray for their improvement. Pray for them to have what they need and all of that. Do kind things quietly. You don't have to blow a trumpet, but just quietly do kind things as a part of your daily living and let your light shine through that. Number five, in all things, be patient. Be patient with them. This again says, don't require them to be where you think you are. Be patient with them. One of the biggest confrontations that's coming today in established churches is when young people come from some fireball group that may really be going full gun, and they leave that congregation and go into another congregation that's old and established and maybe aged and decrepit. And they get in there, and you know what's the biggest problem? They can't be patient. And it's not long before they pull up roots, you know, and take some of the church with them. They go somewhere else and get around among some people that can keep up with them. And as a result, a split in the body has come. Number six, lay down your life for the brethren. When you're getting it in the neck, just lay down your life. When you get it in the back, just lay down your life. Terry Smith taught us this over and over, and it's true. And when the elders treat you unjustly, just lay down your life for them. Serve them and love them. And it may not be that you can see anything in it at all, but just lay your life down and serve them. That can't be wrong. That cannot be bad advice. Lay your life down for the brethren. That's 1 John 3:16 and 17. By this we know love, that Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Number seven, keep up your communication with your former church associates, with the church there, and with the friends that you've had in the past. Keep up those communications. One way you can do it is through tapes. This congregation does not have a lending library system. We've got tapes galore. There are about 375 tapes that I've made back and front, about 750 sermons. And people use them here at this congregation extensively. We don't have an arrangement by which we can send them out of town because so many times they don't come back. But I've had requests over and over and over for people or from people saying, would you please send us some tapes? Some people buy them monthly, over and over. Just, and Jimmy Jones has a waiting list. They just buy all the tapes that come out of the college church every month. Let me read you one. And let me show you a modern-day Aquila and Priscilla. This woman wrote, and in her letter just April the 3rd of this year, she said, my husband and I lived nearly 3 years in North Battleford, Saskatchewan. Now, here was one of these dear souls who left somewhere and went way up yonder. And the best thing that she could have done, or the easiest thing she could have done, was just become discouraged and just dropped out of the scene and be lost to the kingdom. But listen, she didn't do that. She said, we started listening to your tapes on Sunday evening during worship. And she put in parentheses, the ones on Jesus. We've kept in touch with the people there, and they still are talking and thinking about the things that were said on those tapes. See, what they did, instead of just sitting back and resigning themselves to just simply die or just wither or not be a part, they started importing those tapes to be used. Listen to this again. We live in Newport now. That's Newport, Arkansas, back here in the Bible Belt. I wonder what they did when they got back into the Bible Belt. I bet you they just kind of relaxed and kind of floated along. No, they didn't either. Look. My husband and I live in Newport now and worship at Holden. I don't know where Holden is. My husband has a men's class every Thursday night in our home. Oh, they must be an amazing couple. They're listening to your tapes about Jesus. The class is planning a potluck, including the wives, Thursday, April the 10th at 6:30. Could you please come and eat with us and talk with us, and please bring your wife too? Now, the woman wrote that. I know because she says my husband and I, but I know also if she hadn't said it like that, I know she would have written it because men don't write. It's the good women that write. Bless their hearts. So keep up the communications between you and the congregation back where you have been fed. Ask them to send you some tapes. I get letters from people. I got a letter from a man in the Mounted Police, the Canadian Mounted Police. He was stuck way off over yonder behind a snowball, and he'd been up there for years, and he said, I hear your tapes every week. And he said, please send me certain ones. And then I got a letter from people down in Africa, and people, you just couldn't believe wherever they come from. People get these tapes. Something else, correspond with a Christian friend whom you've asked to personally pray for you. Keep in touch with people. Something else, ask for the bulletin of the church here or the church somewhere else where you've been. Ask for them to send you the bulletin. And then something else, subscribe to a religious paper, Power for Today or the Firm Foundation or the Gospel Advocate, something that fits and meets your spiritual need. Okay, those seven things, I think will help. Now, real briefly, what about when you go home this summer to your home congregation? What are you going to do there? Well, don't lose any time. You don't have to establish yourself with them. They know you. They probably know some things about you that aren't all that good, but that's all right. They know you've been to a Christian college for a year, and they're going to be expecting some things out of you, some maturity. And when you get back, and you've been going back periodically, and they've seen you growing, so don't waste any time. Just get in there, hit the ground running. They expect it of you. Rally the young people around you. See, they're going to look at you and think, man, you mean you've been to a Christian college all year? Yeah. And you're a freshman? Yeah, I've been one all year. Plan to be one next year. Well, they're going to just think you hung the moon. And these little old kids, you know, that are in high school, the 14, 15, 16-year-olds, they just think there's just not anybody quite like a college student. And you can just say one word. Y'all come on over tonight. We're going to make some homemade ice cream. And I'll tell you what, they'll just pounce on you like fleas on a dog, and they're going to just have a ball if you'll lead them. Lead them in some real meaningful experiences, some experiences that get out in where life is. Devos are one way, but that's not all of life. Service projects and being serviceable or being at the disposal of older people. Go visit them. Do something kind for them. Sit and listen to them. Just take these young people into kinds of things like that, and you'll be doing a great service to the church there. May I urge you, don't go home and for lack of activity, waste your summer sitting in front of the boob tube. Don't do it. If you want to really turn your tongue green and end up with a bad case of the blahs, let me show you how to do it. Get up about 10 o'clock every morning. And, you know, you stretch and you yawn and you come out and you feel just yicky all over because you've sat up till 2 o'clock the night before watching one of the late shows. And then you go and get you some breakfast leisurely. And you wait until one of the soap operas comes on as the world burns or turns or whatever. And you get ready for that. And then you take one in between time in order to hold you over until you begin seeing Andy Griffith in the evening. And he's pretty good and he's about the only relief you may get. But anyway, don't waste your time sitting in front of the TV set all summer. Get out. Get these young people. Go out. Do things. Play with them. Take them to see some people. Take them to visit people. Serve people. Just get at it, and don't waste your time watching the TV all summer. So whether you go where there's no church, or whether you go to a church that's already there but it's weak, or whether you go home for the summer, let me just tell you, this is where the rubber meets the road, young folks. This is where the bubble bursts, in a sense. You get out there where the real life is being lived, and you're going to see people. As an imperfect person, you're going to be meeting imperfect people. And unless each of you cuts the other some slack and allows each other to be where they are, you're going to have a terrible time. But I suspect, knowing you as I know you, I suspect that you're going to hit the ground running. You're going to radiate just like you've done here. You're going to be finding that your ministry is there. And I think that God will be honored. And you'll be blessed and you'll grow. And by the time you come back here in the fall, you're going to be ready to go again. May God bless you. And may your lives be fruitful and productive. And I'm just so encouraged by this generation. I think, frankly, that the church is in good hands when it's in the hands of young folks like you. Many of you will not be back, and we here in this congregation want you to know you are very, very much loved, and you've been a very real part of our lives. May God bless you. You may need something in the way of encouragement. You may want to respond publicly to the invitation. We're going to sing a song right now, and we're going to offer you this opportunity. We're going to stand and sing, and let's encourage one another while we do that.